Today, I thought I would give a retelling of either two or three of the Jataka stories. Because I think these stories are quite beneficial as allegories, you could say, or as good examples or things to keep in mind. They're like the Aesop's fables, which we can always call to mind and use as a reminder of some principle or some moral. But what we find about the Jataka tales is actually they can be quite profound and often go far beyond the stories of Aesop, which were often cute or practical. Like how to get by in the world. These ones are much more on the level of virtue and spiritual advancement. So while they have the same sort of flavor as Aesop, they go a lot deeper in their treatment of morality and virtue and development of the mind and development of the spiritual path. So I have three here, and I'm not sure if I'll get through them all in the time that I've allotted myself. But I'll just go until time's up, and then I'll stop. So the first one is one that is quite well known among Buddhist circles. It's the Nigrodha-migha Jataka, which is the banyan deer. I believe it's translated as migha means deer. Jataka is the means the past life or the life or the birth, a certain birth when the Bodhisattva was born as a deer of a Nigrodha type, and I guess this is a banyan deer. So the story starts, keep only with the banyan deer, and this is the moral which is going to come at the end. So the verse, the Jatakas are made up of both prose and verse, and the verse is what was kept strictly recited and remembered, and the prose was perhaps modified or even added to later on. Who knows, some of it could be exactly word for word, but it seems likely that it was not recited as strictly as the verses, and so it was just made up based on the verses, or reconstructed based on the verses, because the verses hold the core of the story. So this story has one verse, and the verse is "Keep only with the banyan deer," and so on. This story was told by the master, the Buddha, while in Jetavana, about the mother of the elder named Prince Kassapa. The daughter, we learn, of a wealthy merchant of Rajagaha was deeply rooted in goodness and scorned all temporal things. She had reached her final existence, and within her breast, like a lamp in a pitcher, glowed her sure hope of winning arahantship, which was full enlightenment. As soon as she reached knowledge of herself, as soon as she reached came of age, she took no joy in a worldly life, but yearned to renounce the world. With this aim, she said to her mother and father, "My dear parents, my heart takes no joy in a worldly life. Fain would I embrace the saving doctrine of the Buddha. Suffer me to take the vows." "What, my dear? Ours is a very wealthy family, and you are our only daughter. You cannot take the vows." This means become a nun. Having failed to win her parents' consent, though she asked them again and again, she thought to herself, "Be it so, then. When I am married into another family, I will gain my husband's consent and take the vows." And when, being grown up, she entered another family, she proved a devoted wife and lived a life of goodness and virtue in her new home. Now it came to pass that she conceived of a child, though she knew it not. There was a festival proclaimed in that city, and everybody kept holiday, the city being decked like a city of the gods. But she, even at the height of the festival, neither anointed herself nor put on any finery, going about in her everyday attire. So her husband said to her, "My dear wife, everybody is in holiday-making, but you do not put on your bravery." "My lord and master," she replied, The body is filled with 32 component parts. Wherefore should it be adorned? This bodily frame is not of angelic or archangelic mold. It is not made of gold, jewels, or yellow sandalwood. It takes not its birth from the womb of a lotus flower, white or red or blue. It is not filled with any immortal balsam. Nay, it is bred of corruption, and born of mortal parents. The qualities that mark it are the wearing and wasting away, the decay and destruction of the merely transient. It is fated to swell a graveyard, and it is devoted to lusts. It is the source of sorrow and the occasion of lamentation. It is the abode of all diseases and the repository of the workings of karma. Foul within, it is always excreting. Yea, as all the world can see, its end is death, passing to the charnel house, there to be the dwelling place of worms. What should I achieve, my bridegroom, by tricking out this body? Would not its adornment be like decorating the outside of a clothes stool, of a toilet? My dear wife, rejoined the young merchant, if you regard this body as so sinful, why don't you become a nun? If I am accepted, my husband, I will take the vows this very day. Very good, said he, I will get you admitted into the order. And after he had shown lavish bounty and hospitality to the order of monks, he escorted her with a large following to the nunnery and had her admitted as a sister, but of the following of Devadatta, who was the archenemy of the Buddha and bent on creating a schism in the Sangha. Great was her joy at the fulfillment of her desire to become a sister. As her time for giving birth drew near, the sisters, noticing the change in her person, the swelling in her hands and feet, and her increased size, said, Lady, you seem about to become a mother. What does it mean? I cannot tell, ladies. I only know I have led a virtuous life. So the sisters brought her before Devadatta, saying, Lord, this young gentlewoman, who was admitted a sister, with the reluctant consent of her husband, has now proved to be with child. But whether this dates from before her admission to the order or not, we cannot say. What are we to do now? Not being a Buddha and not having any charity, love, or pity, Devadatta thought thus, It will be a damaging report to get abroad that one of my sisters is with child, and that I condone the offense, for the sexual act was an offense entailing expulsion from the order. My course is clear. I must expel this woman from the order. Without any inquiry, starting forward as if to thrust aside a mast of stone, he said, Away, and expel this woman. Receiving this answer, they arose and with reverent salutation withdrew to their own nunnery. But the girl said to those sisters, Ladies, Devadatta the elder is not the Buddha. My vows were not taken under Devadatta, but under the Buddha, the foremost of the world. Rob me not of the vocation I won so heartily, but take me before the master at Jetavana. So they set out with her for Jetavana, and journeying over the 45 leagues thither from Rajagaha, came in due course to their destination, where, with reverent salutation to the master, they laid the matter before him. Thought the master, the Buddha, Albeit the child was conceived while she was still of the laity, yet it will give the heretics an occasion to say that the ascetic Gotama has taken a sister expelled by Devadatta. Therefore, to cut short such talk, this case must be heard in the presence of the king and his court. So on the morrow he sent for Pasenadi, king of Kosala, the elder and the younger Anattapindika, the lady Visakha, the great lay disciple, and other well-known personages. And in the evening, when the four classes of the faithful followers were all assembled, the monks, the nuns, the laymen, and the laywomen, he said to the elder Upali, who was the expert in the discipline of the monks, Go and clear up this matter of the young sister in the presence of the four groups of my disciples. It shall be done, reverend sir, said the elder. And forth to the assembly he went, and there, seating himself in his place, he called up Visakha, the lay disciple, in sight of the king, and placed the conduct of the inquiry in her hands, saying, First ascertain the precise day of the precise month on which this girl joined the order, Risaka, and thence compute whether she conceived before or since that date. Accordingly, the lady had a curtain put up as a screen, behind which she retired with the girl. Spectatus manibus, pedibus umbilico, ipso ventra puele, whatever that means, the lady found on comparing the days and the months that the conception had taken place before the girl had become a sister. This she reported to the elder, who proclaimed the sister innocent before all the assembly. And she, now that her innocence was established, reverently saluted the order and the mater, and with the sisters returned to her own nunnery. When her time was come, she bore the son, strong in spirit, for whom she had prayed at the feet of the Buddha Padumuttara, ages ago. One day, when the king was passing by the nunnery, he heard the cry of an infant, and asked his courtiers what it meant. They, knowing the facts, told his majesty that the cry came from the child to which the young sister had given birth. "Sirs," said the king, "the care of children is a clog on sisters in their religious life. Let us take charge of him." So the infant was handed over by the king's command to the ladies of his family, and brought up as a prince. When the day came for him to be named, he was called Kassapa, but was known as Prince Kassapa, because he was brought up like a prince. At the age of 7 he was admitted a novice under the master, and a full brother when he was old enough. As time went on, he waxed famous among the expounders of the truth. So the master gave him precedence, saying, "Brethren, the first in eloquence among my disciples is Prince Kassapa." Afterwards, by virtue of the Vamika Sutta, he won arahantship. So too his mother, the sister, grew to clear vision and won the supreme fruit. Prince Kassapa the elder shone in the faith of the Buddha, even as the full moon in the mid-heaven. Now one day in the afternoon, when the Tathagata, on return from his alms round, had addressed the brethren, he passed into his perfumed chamber. At the close of his address, the brethren spent the daytime either in their night quarters or in their day quarters till it was evening, when they assembled in the Hall of Truth and spoke as follows. "Brethren, Devadatta, because he was not a Buddha, and because he had no charity, love, or pity, was nigh being the ruin of the elder Prince Kassapa and his reverend mother. But the all-enlightened Buddha, being the Lord of Truth and being perfect in charity, love, and pity, has proved their salvation." And as they sat there telling the praises of the Buddha, he entered the hall with all the grace of a Buddha, and asked, as he took his seat, what was it they were talking of as they sat together. "Of your own virtues, venerable sir," said they, and told him all. "This is not the first time, brethren," said he, "that the Tathagata has proved the salvation and refuge of these two. He was the same to them in the past also." Then, on the brethren asking him to explain this to them, he revealed what rebirth had hidden from them. Once upon a time, when Brahmadatta was reigning in Benares, the Bodhisattva was born a deer. At his birth he was golden of hue, his eyes were like round jewels, the sheen of his horns were as of silver, his mouth was red as a bunch of scarlet cloth, his four hooves were as though lacquered, his tail was like the yak's, and he was as big as a young foal. Attended by 500 deer, he dwelt in the forest under the name of King Banyan Deer. And hard by him dwelt another deer, also with an attendant herd of 500 deer, who was named Branch Deer, and was as golden of hue as the Bodhisattva. In those days the king of Benares was passionately fond of hunting, and always had meat at every meal. Every day he mustered the whole of his subjects, townsfolk and countryfolk alike, to the detriment of their business, and went hunting. Thought his people, "This king of ours stops at all our work. Suppose we were to sow food and supply water for the deer in his own pleasance," and having driven in a number of deer, to bar them in and deliver them over to the king. So they sowed in the pleasance grass for the deer to eat, and supplied water for them to drink, and opened the gate wide. Then they called out the townsfolk and set out into the forest, armed with sticks and all manners of weapons, to find the deer. They surrounded about a league of forest in order to catch the deer within their circle, and in so doing surrounded the haunt of the banyan and branch deer. As soon as they perceived the deer, they proceeded to beat the trees, bushes, and ground with their sticks till they drove the herds out of their lairs. Then they rattled their swords and spears and bows with so great a din that they drove all the deer into the pleasance and shut the gate. Then they went to the king and said, "Sire, you put a stop to our work by always going a-hunting. So we have driven deer enough from the forest to fill your pleasance. Henceforth feed on them." Hereupon the king betook himself to the pleasance, and in looking over the herd saw among them two golden deer, to whom he granted immunity. Sometimes he would go of his own accord and shoot a deer to bring home. Sometimes the cook would go and shoot one. At first sight of the bow, the deer would dash off trembling for their lives, but after receiving two or three wounds, they grew weary and faint and were slain. The herd of deer told this to the Bodhisatta, who sent for Branch and said, "Friend, the deer are being destroyed in great numbers, and though they cannot escape death, at least let them not be heedlessly wounded. Let the deer go to the block by turns, one day one from my herd, and next day one from yours. The deer on whom the lot falls to go to the place of execution and lie down with its head on your block must do so. In this wise the deer will escape wounding." The other agreed, and thenceforth the deer, whose turn it was, used to go and lie down with its neck ready on the block. The cook used to go and carry off only the victim which awaited them. Now one day the lot fell on a pregnant doe of the herd of Branch, and she went to Branch and said, "Lord, I am with young. When I have brought forth my little one, there will be two of us for to take our turn. Order me to be passed over this turn." "No, I cannot make your turn another," said he. "You must bear the consequences of your own fortune. Begone." Finding no favor with him, the doe went on to the Bodhisatta and told him her story. And he answered, "Very well, you go away, and I will see that the turn passes over you." And therewithal he went himself to the place of execution and lay down with his own head on the block. Cried the cook on seeing him, "Why, here's the king of the deer who was granted immunity. What does this mean?" And off he ran to tell the king. The moment he heard of it, the king mounted his chariot and arrived with a large following. "My friend, the king of the deer," he said, on beholding the Bodhisatta, "did I not promise you your life? How comes it that you are lying here?" "Sire," the Bodhisatta replied, "there came to me a doe, big with young, who prayed me to let her turn fall on another. And as I could not pass the doom of one on to another, I, laying down my own life for her, and taking her doom on myself, have laid me down here. Think not that there is anything behind this, your majesty."
"My lord, the golden king of the deer," said the king, "never yet saw I, even among men, one so abounding in charity, love, and pity as you. Therefore I am pleased with you. Arise, I spare the lives of both you and of her. Though two be spared, what shall the rest do, O king of men?"
I spare them their lives too, my lord."
"Sire, only the deer in your pleasance will thus have gained immunity. What shall all the rest do?"
"Their lives too I spare, my lord."
"Sire, deer will thus be safe, but what about the rest of the four-footed creatures? What will they do?"
"I spare them their lives, too."
"Sire, four-footed creatures will thus be safe. What will the flocks of birds do?"
"They, too, shall be spared."
"Sire, birds will thus be safe, but what will the fishes do who live in the water?"
"I spare their lives also."
After thus interceding with the king for the lives of all creatures, the great being arose, establishing the king in the five precepts, saying, "Walk in righteousness, great king, walk in righteousness and justice towards parents, children, townsmen, and country folk,
so that when this earthly body is dissolved, you may enter the bliss of heaven. Thus, with the grace and charm that marks a Buddha, did he teach the truth to the king. A few days he tarried in the pleasance for the king's instruction, and then, with his attendant herd, he passed into the forest again. And that doe brought forth a fawn fair as the opening bud of the lotus, who used to play about with the branch deer. Seeing this, his mother said to him, "My child, don't go about with him, only go about with the herd of the banyan deer." And by way of exhortation, she repeated the stanza which falls in this birth. "Keep only to the banyan deer and shun the branch deer's herd. More welcome far is death, my child, in banyan's company, than e'en the amplest term of life with branch." Thenceforth the deer, now in the enjoyment of immunity, used to eat men's crops, and the men, remembering the immunity granted to them, did not dare to hit the deer or drive them away. So they assembled in the king's courtyard and laid the matter before the king. Said he, "When the banyan deer won my favor, I promised him a boon. I will forego my kingdom rather than my promise. Begone! Not a man in my kingdom may harm the deer." But when this came to the ears of the banyan deer, he called his herd together and said, "Henceforth you shall not eat the crops of others." And having thus forbidden them, he sent a message to the men, saying, "From this day forward, let no husbandman fence his field, but merely indicate it with leaves tied up around it." And so we here began a plan of tying up leaves to indicate the fields. And never was a deer known to trespass on a field so marked, for thus they had been instructed by the Bodhisatta. Thus did the Bodhisatta exhort the deer of his herd, and thus did he act all his life long, and at the close of a life long passed away with them to fare according to his deserts. The king, too, abode by the Bodhisattva's teaching, and after a life spent in good works, passed away to fare according to his deserts. At the close of this lesson, when the master had repeated that, as now, in bygone days also, he had been the salvation of the pair, he preached the Four Noble Truths. He then showed the connection, linking together the two stories he had told, and identified the birth by saying, "Devadatta was the branch deer of those days, and his followers now were the deer's herd. The nun was the doe, and Prince Kasapa was her offspring. Ananda was the king, and I myself was the banyan deer."